Hello, and welcome back to They Made Another One, where each week we watch an oft-forgotten installment in a franchise and see if you should check it out for yourself. I'm one of your hosts, Corey, and... Oh no, I lost it. Where did it go? Oh, here it is. This is the groundhog. I'm in the hole. And with me, I've got Mitch.
I'm at the broccoli.
Is that from the same sequence?
No, it happens a bit later when the cop asks Cordell what hotel she's staying at.
She says, I'm at the broccoli hotel.
Of course, yes. I'm just staying at the broccoli.
Yeah, everybody, you know the broccoli, of course. Liam is taking some time to go back home to visit some family, which is why he does not have any thoughts on groundhogs nor broccoli, nor this movie. You'll have heard last week his decision to opt out of the inimitable Excessive Force 2, Force on Force. I am also not operating at maximum capacity, so we're probably not in for a three-hour odyssey this week, but never say never. We might come up with all kinds of delightful things to dazzle you with. But, you know, it is undeniable, Mitch, that we did pick this movie because the title's funny.
That's really the only reason. And in fact, there were other choices that we could have gone with. Last week, we came up with some other titles, and we came up with this in the end.
Yeah, it was in one of the more egregious examples to date of cherry picking the genre. It was time to just get to a movie with a funny title. So we're in this weird kind of no man's land limbo because none of us know what excessive force is. Like, none of us have seen it. We don't have thoughts about it as a franchise. We don't know these characters. There's just something undeniably hilarious about calling your movie Excessive Force 2, Force on Force.
It's a ridiculous title. I'm looking at the plot description for Excessive Force 1, just titled Excessive Force, from 1993.
Okay, what is that one cooking?
Chicago policeman Terry McCain is determined to put away mobster Sal DiMarco, who always gets acquitted on technicalities. While monitoring a drug sale, a shootout ensues, and one of Terry's fellow officers gets away with $3 million of Sal's money. Suspecting Terry took the cash, the mobster sends his men to kill Terry's brother, Dylan, and his partner, Frankie Hawkins. Furious, Terry sets out to take revenge by any means necessary.
What's the connection to this movie?
No idea. Directed by John Hess, New Line Cinema. Apparently, Burt Young's in this one. I don't know if there is a through line.
Oh my God, really?
I thought Excessive Force was a Steven Seagal movie because it sounds like a Steven Seagal movie.
Is there really not a connect? Yeah, because the plot description on this one, as described by Wikipedia in a single line, is Harley Cordell is an agent looking for revenge against her ex-boyfriend.
It's Cordell.
Now a criminal. You're right, it is Cordell. Who tried to kill her by shooting her in the head.
Which a little Fallout New Vegas core.
I don't know why we didn't notice R.I.P. Matthew Perry. I don't know why we didn't notice this. He voices that guy. I'm not just saying say that. I didn't notice this on the Wikipedia page, which I've opened more than once. The film is a sequel to Excessive Force, despite not bearing any relation to the original movie. So here's an issue, Mitch, that we've sort of stumbled backwards into. We kind of don't do a ton of those because it's fun to like experiment with like what's the through line, you know?
Yeah.
Trying to gauge like if we know other background stuff, it's like fun to have insider info. So really all we did was watch a movie.
That's really it. I mean, I'm trying to do a little bit of research on the original film right now, so I'm discovering all this stuff out live time.
Yeah.
But apparently Excessive Force, the original, grossed only a little over $1 million at the box office and became a flop. The film opened on May 14, 1993 in 501 theaters, grossing only $300,000 in its opening week. Opening weekend.
So... Excessive Force 1 is a movie that just sort of got dumped into obscurity.
Yeah, and for some reason they made a sequel, so this one's even like more obscure and I imagine probably even less profitable.
I doubt this got a theatrical release. Surely this.
No bet.
This was DTV for sure.
Yeah.
But that begs the question, right? Did a studio exec just realize that title would sound sick? Because they were right. But why do this? Like, were direct-to-video movies, like, getting more sales if it was, like, a sequel and people thought they might know what it was?
Probably.
Like, you were doing essentially what happened to us, right? Like, you were implying to people that they know what this movie or franchise is or might be, and then they end up watching it because they're like, oh, this is related to something. This has some level of familiarity, and then they go, oh, wait, no, the fuck it does not.
Well, excessive
force.
What
is any of this shit?
It sounds familiar, right? It sounds like something you've seen before late night on TV. Just like that title, Excessive Force 2, Force on Force, how could you not? That's kind of what roped us into watching this movie, right?
And more than anything, like, Excessive Force 2, kind of unremarkable, right? Mm-hmm. Excessive Force 2, Force on Force, electric. I need to see it.
Because having force on top of force is
what
excess.
Does it mean?
It's excess.
What did it mean?
Three forces, like, in the title? That's excessive.
It was genuinely enigmatic to just be like, what the fuck does that? And yeah, like, force, force, force. Like, it's just, it's like a parody. It's like just shoving it completely down your throat in a way that I think is, like, genuinely kind of fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I will give the movie this. There is a bit of force on force happening in that two people are, like, tracking each other to kill. So there is a level of force on force. I'll tell you what I was hoping. I was hoping that the Excessive Force movie would have a protagonist whose name was Force. Somehow. First name, last name, nickname, I don't really care how. And then this would introduce a second force, and this would literally be Excessive Force 2, like, force versus force. Like, I wanted it to go, I wanted it to go, like, even further than this, somehow. Like, like, just fuck it. Who cares? Like, you've already called the movie Excessive Force 2, Force on Force.
Yeah, this is a ridiculous. I'm just sort of, I'm skimming.
This really paints the flashbacks in a different light, because I thought we were seeing the first movie.
Yeah, then the flashback sequences are hilarious in this, and we can unpack those when we get there. But I'm reading the Wikipedia page for both of these things right now as we're talking. And like, even by their own admission, the filmmakers are saying that, like, this wasn't a super great film.
That is just exceptionally funny. Well, I guess we may as well just get to it, right? This doesn't have a lot of pedigree. We don't need to waste a lot of time.
I love the poster for this movie. Have you seen it? Or the DVD cover?
Yes.
It's great. I would hang that in my wall.
So, Excessive Force 2, Force on Force, which I have listed as being from the year 2010, but surely that is incorrect. 1995. They should have made this movie in 2010. They should have made Excessive Force 3.
Dude, could you imagine if this was 2010? It's a period piece.
I'd be impressed at how accurate it looked. Really. The movie is directed by Jonathan Winfrey, who has some incredible credits. Crisis in the Kremlin. Yeah, dude. Crisis in the Kremlin. Blood Fist 7, Manhunt.
Holy shit. The man's an artist when it comes to title copy.
Carnosaur 3, Primal Species.
We gotta watch all of these.
Black Scorpion 2, Aftershock. And a couple episodes of Even Stevens.
Oh, man.
Maybe one of the funniest lists that we've ever written. Not to be outdone, we have the writer, Mark Sevi, who has worked on Arachnid, Class of 99-2, The Substitute, Ghoulies 4, Fast Getaway 2, Dream a Little Dream 2, and Dead On, Relentless 2.
Okay.
I love the idea that there was a movie called Relentless, and then when they needed to make a sequel to Relentless, they were like, well, what's another generic phrase? And then they went with Dead On, Relentless 2.
Dead On, Relentless 2. Famously, coming to video near you.
Yeah, famously, this show is a big fan of subtitle first. So, Dead On, Relentless 2, I'm all about it. This movie is edited by Nina Gilberti, who we know from 976 Evil 2, The Astral Factor.
That movie really has legs. So many people, all roads lead back to that movie somehow. We've been talking about it a lot lately.
Yeah, and this is our Excessive Force 2 connection. Thank you, Nina. Great edit job on that It's a Wonderful Life sequence. She has also edited Sistas, The Oval, a whole boatload of Criminal Minds, Joan of Arcadia episodes, Ultraman, The Ultimate Hero, and Sorority House Massacre 2.
Okay. I'm not familiar with most of that.
You know Criminal Minds.
I do. I watched a lot of Criminal Minds as a kid. Did you?
I bet Liam has described videoed a shitload of Criminal Minds.
Did you watch Criminal Minds?
I did a bit, but like, if you asked me to name a single person, I couldn't. Like, I don't, I think I saw it in passing, not, like, I don't know if I was personally, like, a dedicated viewer, if you get what I mean.
Mm-hmm. It kind of creeped me out when I was a kid.
Well, they are, you're getting inside the mind of a criminal.
That
it's
is
meant
creepy.
To unsettle you.
Yeah. What else?
All business today, huh?
Yep.
Cinematographer is Russ Brandt. We got Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, The Crow, Salvation, also Dream a Little Dream 2. So now we're 3 for 4 on Dream a Little
I'm looking up
Dream
The Crow,
2.
Salvation, because that is interesting.
Also, we have the longest title I think we've ever had. Don't be a menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood.
Man, I didn't even know that there were multiple Crow movies. I mean, that's just a... That is a great title that I just glazed over.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're sort of stomping all over my incredible reveal of Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood.
That is a great title, I'm sorry.
Of course they made multiple Crow movies. How else were they going to capitalize on Brandon Lee's death again?
Fair enough. There's a lot of them.
I think Neil wants to do one of them.
I'd be down. I liked the first one.
It's the Crow. It's that guy.
Yeah. And apparently there's one slated to come out this year with Bill Skarsgård, no less.
That can't be right. Unless they're like rebooting it. There's no way they locked in a Skarsgård unless it's a studio like rebooting it from the scratch.
Yeah, United States 2024 released by Lionsgate Films.
That's a reboot then. It
yeah,
has
a
to
reboot.
Be.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, serving as a reboot. There you go.
The music is by Kevin Kiner. See a whole bunch of TV shows, including CSI Miami, Jane the Virgin, and Narcos Mexico. But also a shitload of Star Wars in particular, including Star Wars The Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels. I stopped writing them down at some point because it was a lot of Star Wars. But like, if there's a new Star Wars thing, he probably did some music on it. Doom Patrol. The Invisible Man 2000 to 2002 television show. Those Black Scorpion and Carnosaur movies we mentioned earlier. And also Tremors 3.
Tremors 3? I won't complain. I mean, yeah. We need to watch more Tremors movies on this podcast.
Do we?
I love the Tremors movies.
We've done one.
And I wasn't there for it.
Well, whose fault is that?
It was before my time.
Well, we can talk about it. Maybe we'll do the one with John Heder.
Okay.
I have a lot of credits for some of these people because there's a lot of funny sounding sequels. So bear with me. We have Stacey Randall as Agent Harley Cordell. Puppet Master 4. Transter's 4, Jack of Swords. Ghoulies 4. Transter's 5, Sudden Death. Death is spelled D-E-T-H. Demolition High. From Dusk Till Dawn 2, Texas Blood Money.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, Stacey. Dude, I had to look up what Trancers even is. I would encourage you to look up Trancers 4 or 5.
Okay, pulling that shit up. Trancers 4, Jack of Swords.
Yeah, dude.
Damn. What a title. What a cover.
Yeah, it's baffling stuff.
Okay, what else have you got up your sleeve?
We've got Dan Gauthier playing Lydell. No funny sequels here. We got Teen Witch. We got One Life to Live. We've got Son-in-Law. All My Children. Bradford Tatum is Yates, who is sort of discount Clancy Brown in this sleeveless shirt. He's in a fucking boatload of TV, so much that I didn't really bother writing a lot of it down. David Huggins plays Martinez. He's a big-time stunts guy. Black Panther, Iron Man, Tenet, Kong Skull Island, Wolf of Wall Street, Fright Night, The Reboot, Tremors 4, Terminator 3, Poison Ivy 2, The New Seduction. Is that right?
I think so.
Or is Poison Ivy 3 The New Seduction? I've seen them all. You'd think I would know this.
I haven't seen a single one of them.
Neil made me do the third one because it had Jamie Presley in it, and Jamie Presley was on Mortal Kombat Conquest. Actually, it had Jamie Presley and it had another actor from Mortal Kombat Conquest, but at that point we're getting in the weeds. But he is also in Fast Getaway 2, which we mentioned earlier. I'm going to get to the... I think Poison Ivy 2 is just Poison Ivy 2. Yeah, Poison Ivy 3 is The New Seduction. I stand to correct myself. Poison Ivy 2 Lily is what it's called, of course. With Camille Bell in it, by the way, as a child.
No kidding.
Which was a funny thing for me to learn doing this show. Also, that movie stars Alyssa Milano.
Okay.
Weird, right?
Weird. We're learning all kinds of things today.
Well, I mean, I knew some of it, but yeah. Michael Wiseman plays Bobby Tucci. he's in Predator 2 and the Nick Cage Wicker Man and also Atlas Shrugged Part 3.
I think we should watch all of those on the pod.
We keep threatening to do that, and I'm worried one day we will.
I mean, Atlas Shrugged, the book, is the worst fucking thing I've ever read. I was in high school,
so
they were giving out
movies.
They were giving out copies of Atlas Shrugged to just high schools, right? Because they do that to see if they can get you hooked early.
What do you mean? They were like, what were they doing?
I don't know. Some like libertarian society would donate, or I'm not sure what they were, but they would donate a bunch of copies of Ayn Rand to my high school every year, and there would just be like a bunch of them sitting in a storage room. And so I took a copy and I read it. One of my political science professors was like, oh, haha, like the Ayn Rand Society or whatever dropped off a bunch of books. Like,
they're like,
you guys want it, but read at your own peril.
That's insane.
Yeah. So we all read Atlas Shrugged.
Okay. I have a lot of credits for a lot of these people. Actually, I'm going to start hustling if that's fine.
Please do.
We've got Henry Brown as Captain John Buchanan, a.k.a. disgruntled police captain that all of these movies need. He's in Lethal Weapon, Scrooged, Judicial Consent, Sex, Love, and Cold Hard Cash, Stepfather 2, and also Alan Quartermain and the Temple of Skulls, which is like an Indiana Jones ripoff, but his name is Alan Quartermain.
When did that come out?
I'll have to look that up. Alan
okay.
Quartermain and the... Lost City of Gold. Hold on, this was a reboot, I think, because this was 2008.
Huh.
But there was one in like the 80s.
And so there were a lot of imitations of Indiana Jones.
Whoa,
in the 80s.
On,
like you've
on,
got like Romancing
on,
the Stone, for
hold
example.
On, hold on.
Go ahead.
Hold on. Hold the fucking phone. A lot of to unpack here quickly. This includes the 1937 film King Solomon's Mines, and then the 1979 film King Solomon's Treasure, then the 1986 film Alan Quatermain and the Lost City of Gold, which includes Cassandra Peterson, a.k.a. Elvira, and also James Earl Jones. And then The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which we were just talking about on this show because Liam was doing it at work, which is a movie I saw about 800 times as a child, and I did not know Alan Quatermain was in it. And then Alan Quatermain and the Temple of Skulls in 2008.
You know, I have read King Solomon's Mines, but like I guess he's a character in that. I haven't read it since I was young.
Sean Connery plays Alan Quatermain in The League of Extraordinary... God, I wish Liam was here for this.
Oh, shit. I've seen League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I have too, yeah. Also, do you want to hear the cast of this movie real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Sean Connery is Alan Quatermain. Peto Wilson is Mina Harker. Stuart Townsend is Dorian Gray. Shane West is Tom Sawyer. Jason Fleming is Dr. Jekyll. Richard Roxburgh is Jim Moriarty. And Nasiruddin Shah is Captain Nemo.
Wow.
All-star team.
All the characters. You've got Tom Sawyer. You've got fucking Moriarty.
And Alan Quatermain.
Captain Nemo and Tom Sawyer? Are you kidding me, bro?
Dude, Captain Nemo and Tom Sawyer is my favorite Rush song. This has been a much more fruitful vein than I expected these credits today. Okay. We've got John Sanderford as Agent Tom Harris. Firestarter, Leprechaun, Ryan's Hope, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, and Black Scorpion 2. Jay Patterson is Detective Wayne O'Connor, who I believe is the guy who I thought should have just been John Lithgow.
He does look like John Lithgow in the long shots.
Yes.
And the close ones, not so much.
Yeah, he was in Norman, The Moderate Rise and Tragic Fall of a New York Fixer, Nine Lives, Red Dead Redemption 2, Grand Theft Auto 4, The Lost and Damned, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
No shit.
Shout out to Elias Cody.
Who does he play in Red Dead 2?
They're not named roles. He was in the mix.
Huh.
Cyril O'Reilly plays Deacon, who was in Porky's. And also, I'll include Carnosaur 3 and Blood Fist 7. Anthony T. Pinello is Ingram. He did stunts for the Rush Hour movies, Semi-Pro, Hollow Man, and U.S. Marshals. Shouts out. Anthony Paul plays Mario. Steven Kravitz plays Polly. He was in Howard the Duck and Sudden Impact. And then James Liu plays Lee, who was in that cemetery confrontation. He's like kind of a big deal. He was on Kung Fu, like the David Carradine show. He was in Big Trouble in Little China and Inception. He's been in Avengers. He was in Under Siege 2, Escape from LA, Collateral. He's like a big time stunts guy who also does some acting. He was on the TV show Raven, which we talked about on MK PodQuest. There's another plug.
Yeah, he's done some stuff. Perhaps those are some serious titles.
Perhaps most importantly, though, Joe Dirt 2, Beautiful Loser. Ray Colbert plays Agent Denon.
You know, I don't even know if I could remember who Agent Denon is. But
I don't.
That doesn't matter. Proceed.
But do you want to remember the guy that played Ernie?
Ernie?
Ernie, the guy at the beginning of the movie who witnesses all of the murders.
Oh, in the graveyard, sure.
Yeah, his name is Mandingo Warrior. That's his listed credit name as the actor.
That's a wild name.
It's a bold strategy.
Damn.
He was in a movie called Captain Nuke and the Bomber Boys. These exceptional titles this week. Rick Tyler Barnes plays Jimison. Joe Maruzzo plays Bartholomew Barty D. D'Amato. I'm going to stop reading credits now. We're almost there. John Meese plays Dr. David Predner. Lisa Malili plays Miss McCarthy. I have no idea who that is. Dan Loria plays Franco. I know who that is. He was on The Wonder Years. Tom Wright plays Grant Thompson. He was on like recent stuff. He was on Daisy Jones and the Six, which like just came out. He was on Seinfeld, mm-hmm. Marked for Death, Playing Dangerous 2, and The Exterminator 2. And then Terry J. Vaughn plays Grace. She was on The Steve Harvey Show.
Hmm. The Steve Harvey Show.
Steve Harvey's viral right now for one of the funniest clips I've ever seen on the internet.
What clip is that?
Oh, dude. Are you not in the loop here?
I mean, I've probably seen it. I am a citizen of the internet, but like, which one?
I'm going to send it to you so I can just put the clip in the episode.
Okay.
Oh my God. I'm trying to put the search terms in and YouTube thought I needed a helpline. So this is hard to find. it's okay. So Steve Harvey says,
"Thought about killing myself,"
at the Family Feud board. But he says it in a very like sing-songy way, but in an attempt to find that by searching Steve Harvey kill myself, YouTube thinks I need to like help.
Steve Harvey self-harm.
What's this movie about? This movie is about like an extrajudicial former extrajudicial squad of elite former soldiers who go out on hit missions for the mob, and they get sloppy, and when they're found out, that information is brought to our protagonist, who used to be in the military with these dudes and was invited to join their extrajudicial kill squad and said no. To which her lover slash leader shot her in the head but did not kill her. And now she's out for revenge. But in an attempt to get revenge, had to postpone a surgery to remove bullet fragments from her brain. So she gets disorienting migraines periodically that can cause her problems in the heat of combat. And she has to track down the bad guys.
And she knows kung fu because she's an assassin.
Yeah, she knows all sorts of elite martial arts and also has the biggest handgun you've ever seen.
This is, yeah, she stole that handgun from Predator 2. This
with
is
a laser
like,
sight.
This movie's a bit like Diet Kill Bill.
Isn't it before Kill Bill, though, which is interesting?
It is. It's before Kill Bill, but, you know, you're dealing
so
with
Kill
like
Bill
a,
is sort of Diet Excessive Force 2, Force on Force.
Kill Bill's like 10 times better.
Nah.
20 times better.
Nah. Well, I watched this a few days ago. You watched it today.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, I hate this movie.
Hate?
Yeah, I really didn't like it. Okay. I think the best part about it is the runtime and the fact that it's short. There are some things about this movie that are really colorful and fun, though. So I don't want to like bash it completely. I didn't have a good time watching this movie, but this movie did have its moments. For example, like a lot of stuff that maybe doesn't logically make sense, but if you're just approaching it from that action movie mindset,
it's a vibes piece.
That hell yeah mindset. Like, why on earth is this deadly assassin squad using a sporting crossbow? I don't know, but it's cool as fuck.
Yeah, exactly. It's a vibes piece. I think
there's lots of hell yeah shit in this movie that's like pretty. It's pretty fun. But for me, I was not invested in any of the characters in the story. There's a lot of exposition in this movie that is pointless. We already know her background and where she's come from in these assassin squads. If you're paying attention, you can kind of cobble all those details together in the first act. And then about halfway through the movie, they give you this flashback where she tells you everything you already know. And so it's just a bizarrely paced movie.
Yes. Absolutely, yeah.
There's some fun sequences in here. Even though it's 88 minutes, which is brisk, I think you could probably cut 20 minutes out of this. But it's not the worst thing ever. I just don't like it very much. What about you?
Well, I was talking to Liam, and I had said to him that I thought he made the right decision.
He did.
Skipping this week, because it's very much like not his thing.
Yeah.
And the way I would describe it is partially how I just described it to you now, but like it is a vibes based experience wherein the plot doesn't matter The characterization doesn't really matter. Who any of these people are doesn't really matter. Periodically, they're going to do something cool. If that's enough for you, that's 90 minutes well spent. If it's not, you're going to hate your life and feel bored and a little bit ripped off, probably. That's kind of it. Like, I do think that I had a good enough time with the dumb stuff in this movie that it's fine. And I actually think that some of the action sequences and the set pieces and how they're performed are pretty good, all things considered. But everything surrounding it is like absolute nonsense. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't coalesce very much. I feel like there's too many pieces that are underexplained, which would lead me to assume that Excessive Force 1 would have done a lot of the explaining. So the idea that that's not the case is fucking insane to me. But people just keep getting introduced over and over and over, like new people repeatedly. Like, there's that whole, like, D-plot with Barty D in the clink with those two detectives doing, like, video testimony until they get blown up by a bus or something. And it's like, what the fuck? What? Who is this? Why? Who?
Why does any of this matter? It does. Like, I feel like that whole subplot could be removed from the
film.
Yeah,
well, and it's- then I guess Franco must have wanted him dead.
Yeah.
Which is sort of the connective tissue, but like, we don't know who Franco is. We don't know why this group's working for Franco. We don't know if their other deal was working for Franco or who they were trying to kill or what. Like, none of the explanation matters. Do you want to see a bunch of guys in 1990s vests? Do you want multiple people to get shot with crossbows? Do you like it when a movie has a lot of whip pans?
The whip pans are crazy.
The whip pans are awesome. The whip pans are objectively sick as fuck.
Yeah, like some of the editing techniques in this movie are great.
I love it. Dude, when they're arguing at the end of the movie in that overpass and it's whipping back and forth between Cordell and Lydell and it has a sound effect every time, that's fucking awesome.
My favorite one is when she's doing target practice at the start
and then
with her.
It whips to him. In another scene?
Yeah, it's like a personalized target that she must have printed out that looks like the guy she's planning to kill. And then she obviously fills it with bullets, and then it whips to him, yeah. An incredible transition.
That was genuinely, like, really good. Like, that felt like a very spirited, like, who let them cook kind of, what a great idea. Foundationally, this movie is sort of just, like, cliche central. If you're fine with that, I don't think this is a complete waste of your time. Like, the two encounters in the cemetery, I both think are good.
Yeah.
I really like the long tracking shot at the beginning, and I like the vibes of like a daylight cemetery showdown and then like the goofy, like tactical nerd jargon.
A bit reminiscent of U.S. Marshals, too.
Absolutely. There's a guy up in a tree with a big gun, and then they do like the Terminator-style flowers reveal guns, but also a crossbow is there, and then like action ensues. They put the camera like between a guy's legs, and he falls over. Like, the camera works like really kind of off the wall. Or rather, pardon me, the camera flips over from a dead guy's perspective to establish an unexpected standoff with somebody else.
Like, it is good. Like, I think with a lot of these made-to-TV 90s action movies, they take a lot of risks. Like, not necessarily risks, but there is that freedom, I think, to just experiment with camera movement and do stuff that you wouldn't normally see somewhere else.
I think they're being genuinely bold, and I think that it's good. And I like that it cuts from that, which also had a lot of slow-mo. Like, they were John Woo-ing it up.
Sam Peckinpah vibes.
Yeah. But then it cuts straight to, like, Venetian blinds, grouchy police captain, like, Lethal Weapons scene. And I'm like, this is sick. Like, we're just ticking the cliche boxes because we go straight from there to the firing range, and then we meet Cordell, and then they're talking about Lydell. I don't know why they made their names.
That naming
so
is so dumb. They're so, so close. Dumb. Cordell and Lydell are the two main characters of this
year,
fam.
Her one military friend is like, he's like trying to find a shadow in the dark.
Yeah.
And then when she gets back to the cemetery, she encounters like a random gang of long-haired hooligans roving around threatening to kill cops.
Oh man, I wrote down a quote from that. It's hey, check out the white guy in the suit.
And but like to reveal the protagonist in that scene, they establish the gang, and then from out of camera, one of the gang members is thrown straight into the air over a bunch of gravestones.
Yeah, that's a great bit. It's like that, awesome. That's the kind of color that I wish this film had more of. Because I feel like there's when it's doing that and it's operating on that level, it rules, right? It's just being like fun. It's being itself. And then when it just kind of gets into these dialogue scenes, just long exposition of people talking, or the plot, which you don't really care much for, gets in the way of what we're all here for. And we're here for shit like that. We're here for excessive force to force on force.
Yeah, I'm not, here for not just conversations. Going to John Lithgow in the grave and saying you shouldn't get so buried in your work, it might kill you.
Yeah, I'm here for that.
That's a great line. And I love that actor, he has a really weird laugh. So every time he laughs, it's like kind of off-putting.
He does. I have a soft spot for movies like this. Like stuff from the 90s and early 2000s, independent action films that you might have watched on TV with your dad late at night in like the early 2000s. I love movies like this, and I don't think that this is a particularly like great effort. Like there's lots of other ones that I think are much better. Like even if you were to go on Tubi right now and look at like made to TV action films from the 90s, you could see much better stuff. In fact, a few weeks ago, Eric and I watched this movie called Body Count from 1995 with Robert Davi, Stephen Bauer, Bridget Nielsen, and a bunch of other people. And I really enjoyed that movie. It's like this New York or this New Orleans cop drama where they're going after this assassin who uses a samurai sword, and it's fucking sick.
Yeah, I will say though, I do want to give this movie, I think, more credit than you do, because I think the weird stuff is genuinely interesting.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
Like,
I just wish there was more of it.
Like, she rolls up to the hotel in her like cool rental car, which is a very cool looking car. I wish I could tell what it was. And then they cut back to that, like, no, they cut to Lydell at his house and Clancy Brown goes to talk to him, but he's looking through this like weird prism. Like, he's like ogling people through like a weird prism that gives him like eight eyes. And then it cuts from that to Cordell going to like a medical school to hook up with her like doctor boyfriend that gives her prescription drugs. And you see a group of medical students sitting around a table, and one of them is being lambasted for being shocked at how huge a dude's dick was.
That's a ridiculous scene.
It's like, but the movie's like full of those. The movie's problem is that it makes those kind of boring. But like talking about it's fun.
Yeah, I think if you were listening to us talk about it, it might sound maybe more enticing than it actually is. Like, I think some of the action sequences are pretty fun. Like I do like the scene where she like leaps through that plate glass window and gets shot with a shotgun. Like that's a good stunt. That's good action. That's excessive force on force too. Or excessive force to force on force, excuse me.
Have you seen The Card Counter?
Yeah, I think we watched it together, didn't we?
Did we?
No, I watched it with Cameron, I know, in my basement.
Okay.
I just can't remember if you were there or not.
There's two flashbacks in this movie. One of them is Lydell and Cordell having sex and she gets shot in the head in the middle of it. But there's one before that where they're like grinding up on each other in like a firing range, and they're in like these like desert fatigues. And
that shot's hilarious.
And it's a really wide angle lens, and it keeps like rocking the camera back and forth into different Dutch angles. And it reminded me of that sequence in The Card Counter when they're in the jail at Abu Ghraib. And like the camera is just fucking insane. And like all the weirdest shit you've ever seen is happening with this like military veneer. And I'm not saying that that sequence in The Card Counter is funny, but here it looks hilarious.
I forgot about that movie, about The Card Counter, I mean.
Shout out to my guy.
Paul Schrader.
Yeah. And Oscar Isaac.
And Willem Dafoe.
And fucking, isn't it? It's Tiffany Haddish, right?
Yeah.
They got everybody in there.
Not a bad cast.
No, but and then it cuts, and then it goes from that thing I just described to a long shot of a guy across a roof trying to assassinate somebody through a hotel window with a crossbow.
I wanted to see more crossbow shit.
Also, she's wearing the most insane outfit I've ever seen in that sequence. It's like 90s athletic wear, but it's like a really long skirt that looks like pants with the sides cut off. That looks like hard to do karate in. And it's just, it's so bizarre. And then she has that conversation with the guy that she knows from the military who got hurt and is now a veteran who got placed in a job teaching people basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this movie is, like, loaded to the brim with, like, weird stuff. The problem is it's bogged down by stuff like them talking in their evil criminal warehouse or her talking to the doctor boyfriend
with dialogue that you've probably heard somewhere else.
Yeah, the dialogue's
not fresh.
Whatever. But also, I would say that even beyond that, I think it's just boring. Like, it slows it right down where, like, if this was just a wall-to-wall, like, batshit stuff, which a lot of it is, like, by the end of the movie, they're dressed as police officers and like driving buses, making buses explode, and like shooting RPGs into police precincts. Like, it really goes places.
It does ramp up nicely, but I think it doesn't end well. I think the ending is fucking dumb.
No, it's stupid. It's really funny that they both roll down that hill, though.
Mm-hmm. And then all that exposition when they are fighting, like, I want you to live in hell, Lydell. This time, you're going to be dead, or you're dead wrong.
Yeah. Like, I kind of just want to gush about the stuff that I liked, because everything else is really boring.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few things that stand out, but otherwise, not for me. Like, I feel like I've almost already talked about everything I like, but keep going. If there's more you want to say, I might remember.
Well, just a handful of interesting performances. I think Lydell and Yates have their moments together as like a straight man, goofy guy, but instead of goofy guy, make him like stressed and weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's two really weird instances of Cordell and Grace, played by Terry J. Vaughn, like having weird interactions around her like nonchalant murder boyfriend, where he like destroys her apartment for no reason multiple times.
True.
Which is interesting. And that's all cool. There is a flashback to them being on tour and having sex before she gets shot in the head. And I just need everybody to know, whether you've seen either of these things or not, that the set design of the hotel room that they're in is almost like, it is the exact same design language as Genevieve's bedroom from Mortal Kombat Conquest.
It's giving Dracula, like the Coppola one.
It's like
the 90s.
Coppola Dracula in the desert is what they're doing. It's like Coppola Dracula Aladdin.
What a mix.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's cool stuff. And I do want to say, I highlighted the cemetery sequences earlier and also the fight
scene. I like those. I like both the cemetery sequences.
But also the fight scene at the end between the two leads. I actually think the camera manages to be, like, relatively patient. I think it's better in the beginning than it is at the end. There's, like, a little bit of a tendency to cut too much, but it's not super egregious. I feel like it does want you to see the action as it's happening, and doesn't look terrible. Like, and I think the performers that they have here are like good stunt performers. And if you enjoy action movies, particularly action movies like of this grade, like you'll have a good time. But if you don't, then like just skip it completely.
I think you could skip it, but there are some interesting things, and it is kind of cool that a lot of these actors were working and did other stuff, right?
Yeah. I think the trick is put this on, maybe watch it with some friends and just like talk over the boring parts, or like put it on while you're doing something else or something. There is stuff to enjoy here, but by no means do you have to like stop what you're doing and be like, I have to go watch fucking Excessive Force 2, Force on Force, like today.
Yeah. The best part's the title and the fact that it's short.
The title's so good.
But it could be shorter.
The title's unbelievable. Yeah, I will say that we're definitely up against it just in terms of like, this isn't a style of movie of this era and budget range that I'm super used to or super familiar with. So like, I don't have a lot of comparison points. Like, I either have comparison points to like outright Stone Cold classics that like John Woo or Jackie Chan made, or like Jean-Claude Van Damme. And it's like, those were all a cut above this. But like, this is totally acceptable. It's very cliche ridden. And your mileage may vary with that, but like foundationally, it offers and provides a specific thing and has a lot of really weird quirks.
Yeah, like if you're looking for kind of an off the wall action movie from this period of this kind of ilk with a small budget, a lot of just zany, weird characters, cheesy dialogue. If that is where you feel at home, then yeah, this is for you.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I could confidently recommend this movie to most people. But
pretty
that's okay.
Much. Yeah.
This is a very kind of niche thing. Even though I think in the 90s it was kind of going for like more of a broad appeal. I think my dad would probably like this. If he caught it just flicking between channels, I feel like he'd be watching this and like something else at 100%. The same time and just going to it on commercial breaks.
If I may, we have breaking TMAO news.
Oh, go ahead.
There is a movie in the works that is going to be built from the ground up for our show. Just been put out there. The reports are just now developing that they are working on 28 years later.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that episode whenever that movie comes out, because we'll definitely do it. I've seen 28 Days Later. I don't know if I've seen Weeks.
I don't think I've seen any of them.
They're pretty cool.
I've heard good things, but here I am.
Here's my final question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you an opportunity here. Liam has the good list for the genre, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I have a list. We could genero.
Just genero.
Just genero?
What's the likelihood we're going to get something we've seen? And if not, we can spin again. Are we working with ladder clauses and silver bullets?
I would accept one or the other, but not both.
Okay.
Let me get the list up.
Pull that shit up.
I gotta find it now. Oh, I did find it. Okay. Now, I'm operating off of one that has 307 on it. I don't know if it's the most up-to-date version.
Can't be far. I know we're in the low 300s.
Okay. Okay. You just want to get out of here, I guess. I was going to give you a whole opportunity to pick something. Ship sailed, though. Because we got big money. No skeletons. 3, 2, 1, spin. Oh, a tight 250. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to look at either side. Oh boy. So we're going to look at either side of it. Now I'm going to remind you, ladder or silver bullet, not both.
Okay. Ladder.
Are you, I wasn't going to make you decide right now, but okay.
Okay, okay. Actually, no, I'm not going to decide.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Hold on. We'll see. Because we got 250. 249 is alien abduction incident in Lake County. No idea.
No idea.
251 is Alligator 2, the mutation.
Whew.
And 250 is Showgirls 2.
I've seen Alligator 2, actually.
You've what?
Let me look it up. I think I have. I think I had an Alligator movie marathon.
Okay.
Alligator 1 is good. have I seen this? I think I might have. I've seen Alligator like from 1980, and this one is 1991. I might have seen this.
Okay.
Hey, John Hess. It's by the same guy.
Okay.
It's by the guy who did Excessive Force.
Wait, what? The first Excessive Force?
Yeah.
What the fuck? The guy who made Excessive Force made Alligator 2?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Huh.
Now, we did land on Showgirls 2.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I haven't seen Showgirls 1.
Me neither.
Want to.
Feels like an issue.
I would rather do Alligator 2. Electric Boogaloo. What do you think?
Yeah, I would do that.
Okay. I feel like Liam would probably be in for that, too.
Yeah, deal. I truly think that Showgirl 2 Pennies from Heaven would benefit from knowing even a single thing about Showgirls. Wow. 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 This poster's bad.
For Showgirls 2 or Alligator 2?
Showgirls 2. Oh, this got kickstarted in the late 2000s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay with Alligator 2.
The first one's great, and I'm pretty sure that it's on Tubi, or if not Tubi Shudder.
We'll see.
Yeah, we're okay.
Do you want to plug anything? What was that replicating? Well, you can find Liam on Letterboxd and various social medias under his film writing alter ego, Graham the Haunted Marshmallow, at Graham the Mallow. You can check out what is it called? The Little Bitches Podcast. Oh, it's In the Weeds with Weezer, the Little Bitches Podcast, where they talk about Weezer. And also listen to his band Guest Room Status. You can go to MortalCombatConquest.ca for all the stuff I've already plugged in this episode multiple times. Thank you all once again for listening to this episode of They Made Another One. You can find us all over the internet on Instagram at They Made Another, which is all one word, and on Letterboxd at TMAO. You can find episodes on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, and all other podcast services as They Made Another One. Also, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can write us a nice review. You can share us with your friends. Anything to get us out in front of other people would be greatly appreciated. You can reach us via email at tmaopodcast@gmail.com with recommendations for future episodes, questions, comments, and the best example of a whip pan in a movie? That's a little niche, but I bet there's some good ones. Our fantastic thumbnail art is done by Jade Dickinson. You can find on Instagram at Jade Sketches. And with all that out of the way, we will catch you here next week for a mutating alligator. And they made another one?